Hi, I'm Lisa Baker, and I'm an integrative nutrition health coach. And as a coach, I'm always happy to come across colleagues who serve as a resource, not just for my clients, but also for me, really challenging and encouraging me in my own practice. And Sue Hansen is just such a person. I always come away from our talks really inspired. Sue is a friend of mine who has a practice as a personal and spiritual guide. We met in a networking group and have since spent a lot of time talking about our work and our lives, and have done one really fun and transformative workshop together. I'm looking forward to doing more. So I'd love to share Sue with you through this question and answer. So welcome, Sue.
Well, I'm so glad to be here, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so excited for this conversation. So let's start with Sue. You started out doing straightforward therapy with people, and tell us a little bit about how that has evolved over the years.
Oh my goodness, when I look at it, it's really, really changed over the years. When I first got into this whole thing of working with people, I really saw people as, my job is helping to fix people, to get them to more be able to function more normally in the world. As things have changed, well, at least I'm glad I started out with the sense of listening to people, because as I listened to them, I could see that they had strengths, they had ways of operating, and the ways of operating made sense. Things worked for them, except when they didn't. And so then I started exploring more and more on a strength base, on a thing that they weren't broken, but they were could possibly function on a better level. And the more I got to do my own work, the more I started encouraging more of a holistic approach, in which we were looking at, the body. We were looking at the spirit. We were looking at all of the centers of intelligence, not just, I'm kind of a heart type. I really like feelings. And that used to be the big focus. What are you feeling? Feelings are still important, but now I also include, what are the thoughts that you have? How does that form things for you? What are the stories that you're telling yourself? Also, what do you know intuitively? And what is your body telling you?
So say more about the centers of intelligence, if you could.
Well, there are basically three centers of intelligence. One is the mind. And the mind often forms fears. It also is a way of logicking our way out of things or into things.
Okay.
Then there's kind of a body center. And the body center is about worth. It's about our sense of our worth in the world and the sense of other people's worth. And it's very intuitive. And then we have the heart center. And the heart center is about connection. And it's all about, preventing the right image so that we can connect with other people. Connection is really important. Worth is really important. Security is really important. And we all have a preference for which one of those we trust the most if they're in conflict.
Okay.
But when we can open to all of them, then we're able to get a much clearer idea of what's going on, both inside ourselves and with other people.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
So in the process of, developing more, more understanding of what my work with people is I developed the idea that I'm not sure I'm so down with therapy. Therapy seems to work around the idea of brokenness. And certainly we have those broken parts in ourselves, but we also have the healing part, the part that's trying always to make us well, just like with our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I work with a lot more with people is working with that part. And part of that is their spiritual self, often called the soul. And I pay a great deal of attention to where that soul wants to go when we're working. I'm always listening to that. So, yeah.
That's really beautiful. Just what is your soul trying to do? Where is your soul trying to go? And I think you hit on something that I also work a lot with, which is listening. Try to listen. I really focus on helping people listen to their bodies, and you are really helping people listen to, you know, where does your soul want to go? I think that's a great question.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've always liked about our conversations, and that's one of the reasons I've sent people to you, is you have that kind of an approach of really listening to, encouraging people to really listen to themselves,
mm-hmm.
rather than giving them a set sort of idea of how they're supposed to operate.
Right, and the fixing, the healing is actually coming from them. It's more of a support system for them to get where they want to go than a prescription of this is what you need to do. It's like, well, what is your body telling you need to do? And I imagine with you it's much more, where is your soul telling you it wants to go, and how can I help you get there?
Right. That's exactly right.
Right. And you've actually switched your language completely. You're not really thinking about yourself as a therapist, really. You use the term guide. And so I want you to talk a little bit about how that's different from a coach.
Yes. I must say, even though I know you and you coach and I know what you do and it's a different thing, I still get the image in my head of blowing a whistle and, you know, saying, okay, go, go, go.
Interesting. Yeah, like a football coach or a soccer coach.
Right, right.
Oh, that's so interesting. I've never thought about that image. Yeah, I mean, I use that image, but in a completely different way, in a, like a supportive way, and you're thinking about it as someone blowing a whistle and going, ah!
Yeah, and I think there is definitely a place for that.
Uh-huh.
What my role is a guide. It's kind of like we're on a journey, and I know the territory somewhat, both from my own experience and from the people I've worked with. And so I'm able with people to listen to where they're wanting to go, and I'm able to tell them, along this path, you may encounter this. And this may be a way that you might want to approach that.
Mm.
It's still their choice. I'm only guiding.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'm going to wait with them as they discover where they want to go. I'm also going to tell them about places they might not even know exist in their lives. And so as a guide, I'm on the journey with them.
That's great. Yeah, I really, I resonate with this so much. I just love to say this because it sort of freaks people out, but every single client of mine teaches me something. And it's really like being on a journey and saying, oh, well, what happens if we encounter this? And sometimes they have a completely different idea of how they want to heal it or change it or a direction they want to go in. And I always think, oh, wow, I never even thought of that. And like every single client teaches me something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. Excellent. Good. So I know that in your work you sometimes use the Enneagram. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about what that is and how it's useful.
So the Enneagram was, when I discovered the Enneagram, I just discovered the most incredible way of looking at at people and interactions in growth. The Enneagram is actually, it's not so much something that somebody came up with and said, okay, this makes sense, is it's kind of an ongoing discovery of something that exists. And what exists is our egos. When we come into the world, our ego is trying to help us to survive and find satisfaction. And within that, we find a way that we think it will work.
Mm.
And it does work for us, except, of course, when it doesn't.
When it doesn't.
And from that basic idea, and I'll give you one of the basic ideas. There's nine of them. One of the basic ideas is that to be loved, you must be needed. And to be needed, you must provide for other people what they need. So, well, that's true. People like that, they love that. When you're focusing on what they need, and you're trying to provide that, that's valuable. But you can also be loved just for yourself without what you're doing.
Mm.
So you see how it kind of narrows down. And this narrow view, of course, leaves out all sorts of possibilities of how we can act in the world. We get ideas of this is what I need to be doing. Otherwise, you know, and the ego is pretty strong. And we want to thank the ego because it does help us to function in the world. But we also want to open that up and start to live in a much freer way. The Enneagram also talks about how each of these types has a virtue, has an understanding of the world that's so much more vast. And if you put all of those understandings together, you really come up with 360, well, it's more than 360, yes. You get a whole view of how we can function.
Mm-hmm.
And this has helped both psychologically and spiritually to go to our most essential self. And some of the ways that I've used it is, we have stories. Each of these types has stories. And once you know the stories, they don't have the power that they had before.
Mm.
Such as there are stories about, I'm going to be abandoned, or I have to be extremely special.
Mm.
Otherwise, I'm nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's surprising how that story can seem like it's very, very real. But once you get to know it, you go, oh, I recognize that story, and it allows you to kind of let it rest and let the other possibilities come forward.
Mm.
The other way I use it is I do work with couples,
mm-hmm.
and with couples it's particularly valuable in that I've always felt like in relationships we should all be considering ourselves as foreign exchange students. The other person
Ooh,
is
say
a
more
foreign
about
exchange
that.
Student. Yeah. It's if you have a foreign exchange student coming to you, you don't say to them, this is how it's done. You say, in my culture, we do it this way. How do they do it in your culture? And you get curious about the other person. And so when we know each other's type, in a relationship, it's easier to understand just what the other person is doing and after, and how we can interact with them in a more more effective way. Because
I love that. That's
yeah.
great. It also makes me giggle because I have learned a lot of languages in my life, and I also think that it's somewhat troubling, but also somewhat entertaining when we see somebody who does not know a lot of languages or speaks only one language try to interact with someone who speaks a foreign language. And there's this sort of tendency to not only slow down, but really start yelling.
Yeah.
When you think about your metaphor for this, it's just perfect. It's like if you start yelling at this person, they're not going to understand you any better than they did when you spoke quietly.
Right, really, exactly.
You really need to not. You need to stop yelling. You need to listen as much as you're talking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great, great way to look at it. So, how does that play out with your work with couples?
Well, first of all, we introduce these differences, and not as you're going to just have to get used to this person because they're going to operate that way because they're this type,
mm-hmm.
but also introduce their best self, their essential self, to both themselves and to the other person. And that's what you're heading for. You're not heading for the other person to become your best self, but for them to become their best self.
Mm.
And recognizing that is in there. I think one of the best things we can do for someone we love is to actually call them forward into their best self.
Mm.
And that's what really good relationships do.
Mm-hmm. So it's really like looking, I think about it also in terms of parenting, just because I know very little about the Enneagram, but I do know a little bit about it, and I know some of the sort of five love languages, language about relationships, and I think about how, you know, one of my children is so incredibly like me that it's easy for me to bring out what this child can do and be, and the other child is almost like an alien to me.
Yeah,
such a different type, and it's very challenging in that case to sort of draw out the best and help the child along to what that child needs to own and do and be.
Yes, that is an incredible thing about the Enneagram, too. My daughter is very, very different from me. And for me to, when I started to understand her type and what she was after and what she was trying to head towards, and then I started to understand where her best self is, and it really changed our interactions tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
I find her so intriguing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Frustrating and intriguing, right?
Yeah. And it's actually opened up the way that I operate in the world because I go, hey, that's not a bad strategy that she's got
mm-hmm.
there in
yeah.
some ways. I could use a little of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of a friend of mine who recently said, oh my gosh, you know, we were supposed to do something and she had to postpone and then she had to postpone again and she was getting all worked up about it and she's like, you know, I'm really not this kind of a person. And I said, you know what, it's okay. You're making these changes because you have small children and you have to adapt to them. And it just really brought to the front of my mind that I used to be such a scheduled person. And one thing my children taught me was, you know, sometimes you just have to fly by the seat of your pants. And it's going to be okay. Right?
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, they really open up some of that in us.
Yeah. And once you start opening up to your children, I think children are an easier way for us to open up. We can also open up to other people who we run into in our lives,
mm-hmm.
because we start seeing them all as having been children, for one thing.
Mm.
But also being people that we are able to look at just in a much more open way.
Mm-hmm. So what do you enjoy most about your work? You just seem to love it a lot, and I want to know what you love the most.
Oh, gosh, I do love my work. Well, first of all, I love interacting with all these different people. But the other thing I really, really like is watching and participating in people becoming much more themselves. And just like you said earlier, it's always surprising, like, how someone will go about developing that. I might not go down that path, but they find their own strengths. Together we find their strengths. We find how, what works for them, and how to solve some of these mysteries. I think that's the other thing I love, is the mystery of how we all grow. To be a part of that is fantastic.
Yeah, and it seems like it involves a lot of letting go on your part. I know as sometimes as a coach, it's really easy to get invested in, like, this is about me. I have to be the best kind of coach. I have to show them how to do it. And actually, it works so much better when you let that go and just say, you know what, you're the one in charge. I'm just here to support you. So what do you want to do? And it, at first, it can be a very strange tension because people are like, wait a minute. I came to you for advice.
Right.
Like, well, that's not what I offer.
And for them to recognize and come to a place of where they recognize their own wisdom and allow that to come out.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me a little about how you work with people. So if somebody would like to work with you, does it, you know, is there a set number of sessions, or how would it work?
There isn't a set number of sessions. Some people meet with me once a week for quite a while. Other people kind of come in and out of having sessions with me. And what we do is at the end of each session, we kind of take a look at what have we been working on and figure out when is the best time to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a 50-minute session. I am still kind of caught in that one. And they're pretty much developed around need. By the person in our exploration of that.
So again, even that is sort of client-led. Like, do you need something intensive? Do you need some things that's just checking in, maintenance, once in a while?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all very flexible. That's great. So
yeah.
Who is your ideal client?
Oh, it varies so much. You know, not everybody walks in being my ideal client. In fact, sometimes I'm not even sure how is this going to work. But eventually, we need to get to a place of where they're willing to move into seeing themselves as whole people, seeing themselves as not needing to be fixed, and where they are able to join with me so that we're working together for what they want. And so people can come from all sorts of different things. They can come with different problems. Some people have anxiety. Some people have depression. Some people are just feeling like they need more out of their lives. And, of course, there's the couples, and some couples are really struggling with each other, and some just want to make things better.
Yeah, it's a huge range. Yeah. It sounds that like you do maybe not expect, but you do look for people whose heads are sort of in the right place to start work with you.
Yeah. I mean, they have to. I don't think they would be very satisfied with me if they walk in and they want me to give them all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
If that's their goal, they're going to be very disappointed. some people come in and that's their initial idea, and they're able to open to the possibility that they've got some wisdom within them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it works out well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. I found that in my work too, that you know, you can work with someone and they'll say, you know, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this. And then, you know, you meet for your next session. It's sort of like, well, no, I didn't do it. Okay, why? sort of lack of confidence that they can do something, or lack of confidence in their own ability to think through things and feel through things and actually be present with the process.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's also, recently I've had a couple of times when people have come back and they said, you know, I really didn't do what you wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, first of all, that was something the two of us came up with together. And let's see if there was maybe some wisdom in not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reason? What got in the way?
Mm-hmm.
Because that can often give us more information also.
Mm-hmm. I find that very often that can also be part of the story, or that is the story, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it can be a really interesting conversation at that point that, you know, takes them in a completely different direction.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So what else? What else would you like to share with us?
I guess I just want to share the enthusiasm for this grand exploration of what it means to be a human being living in this world.
Mm. Have you reached any conclusions? No, it's about the process.
It's definitely about the process. It's not so much about the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been a big thing for me to learn. Staying in the process is itself what life's about.
Yeah. And sometimes the process can be messy.
Yeah, it sure can.
Yeah.
It can't be all about sweetness and light, you mm-hmm. know?
Mm-hmm.
We have those tough times to go through, but they're so worth it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so worth it.
Yeah.
If we can really, really use our resources to move through them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, great. Thank you for sharing all that with me. And my final question for you is, how can people find you if they'd like to work with you? I'll also put this in the notes, but for people listening, how can they find you and work with you?
Okay. Well, you can call me. My number is 734-417-8397.
Okay.
Can contact me by email. It's suhansen.com, Sue@suehansen.com. I also have a website, which is www.suehansen.com. And there's a Facebook, Sue Hansen Personal and Spiritual Guidance.
Excellent. Thanks so much for sharing this time with me. And as always, I come away from our sessions so inspired by you.
The feeling is very mutual.
Good.
Yes.
Well, let's talk soon about doing another workshop together.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.